filling in for John Flood for John Flood and Friends, and we're here talking about the same kind of stuff that John Flood does every week. However, Eric, I thought we'd discuss that we were going to change up the music today. I don't think you did your homework. Oh, you did? You did change it?
It's coming.
Okay, thank you very much. I recognize that song, though, that we just heard, but that's okay. That's all right. I'm not going to give you too much crap about that. So every Thursday on John Flood and Friends, we get the Lawrence Business Magazine in here to have different guests, and today is no different. We've got Ann Herzog here from Lawrence Business Magazine. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. It's a beautiful day.
God. Well, you know, I sound like a repeat every day. I have been doing this for about 4 or 5 months now. We're so blessed with this greatest weather. This year has been phenomenal with the weather. Love it.
I do too. Just need a little bit more rain.
We do need, well, and it comes when we're all asleep. So it's perfect.
That is true. It's
like Camelot. Lawrence Candace is great.
But so she's Camelot.
It is Camelot. Lawrence Candace is Camelot. And so it kind of cool though today. We've got a great guest on, Steve Maselli of Maselli's You just ended at Maselli's. Okay,
that's
great. So it definitely fits the mold of my typical guest that I would have on LOL Llewellyn on Lawrence, the local businessman that is all about the local thing and promoting local business and doing whatever we can to promote local business, which Lawrence Business Magazine is all about that as well.
Yeah, and one of the things, our missions in Lawrence Business Magazine is to talk about businesses and people making a positive impact on Lawrence, which can be a broad range of things, but it's just a perspective, I think, as businesses in the community that they're not just a business, they're part of our bigger community. And I think it's good for businesses to see themselves that way. And I think I think also that the community sees the businesses just not as a storefront, but as part of our community.
Absolutely.
And yes. Steve is a perfect example of somebody that's been really involved in the community. But I was really interested on when we were talking about Steve. Steve is that we profiled in our magazine back in for the holidays, kind of talk about holiday catering and stuff. But he's been in the Lawrence community for a long time. So
long time.
I was going to ask him, tell us. How did you start Maselli's?
Actually, I think I got this all started back when I was a scholarship hall director at KU. I mean, I came to KU, and I like to tell the story that my first semester at KU was Roy Williams's first semester, and we both came from Chapel Hill, but I stayed and he left. So
yeah.
You're kind of stuck with me.
Great.
So I was a KU student, and I was a scholarship hall director for 5 years. And if you're not familiar with the scholarship hall system, basically there's a graduate student who is the director, and they would buy the food and organize the hall, and then the students would cook and clean in exchange for a $1,000 reduction in their fees. So I did that for about 5 years, and of course I was not going to tolerate the same mistakes over and over again. So I created a little cookbook, and I trained those students, and we learned together, and we documented, and we created a system.
Wow.
I think I enjoyed it a little bit too much because I didn't get my master's thesis done, and I was there for 5 years. I finally had to leave because I figured I needed to finish that thesis. And it just so happened that summer I met Mrs. Ekdahl and the dining hall on Daisy Hill is named after her, and she saw some catering that I did for just one of my classmates in the Slavic department. She gave me her card, and I think my brain just started going from there. I never did finish that PhD dissertation, unfortunately. I wish
well,
I could have.
What was that PhD dissertation
It was on...
what was it going to be on?
Stanislav Iwaszkiewicz. He was, a Polish writer.
That relates to the catering business extremely
doesn't
it?
Yeah, yes, it does. Mm-hmm. I would have been... all my professors say, well, you know what? I probably I'm going to be able to make more money doing what I'm doing than in Polish literature.
So do you serve a lot of Polish food?
Actually, none at all. None at all. Some good bratwurst. So that being said, I just started this organization, started working with community organizations. I mean, people in town, even the ones listening to this show, might remember Tony and Tina's wedding I did with the Lawrence Community Theater many, many years ago. Oh, sorry, now they're called Theater Lawrence. They have evolved. And the United Methodist Women at the First Methodist Church downtown, they were... some of the community organizations that supported me during my early days. And I think
So in your early days, so what were you using for a kitchen? I mean, what were you using? Did you Because you're not
I catered
you
out of
now,
my
right?
No. I right. catered out of my house, and I also for church events cooked at the church. But with each job that I had, since I had my income from being a GTA teaching Polish at KU, and I worked at Hastings as well. Anytime I earned, I had three jobs.
Wow.
I had three jobs.
Sure.
So every penny I earned, I reinvested it in the business, bought more equipment, until I finally built my first commercial kitchen on South Park where the old campus hideaway was. I think right today there's that Ad Astra, Ad Acupuncture or something like that.
Oh, wow.
I know.
So when was that? When did you build that kitchen?
2000.
Okay.
But yeah, Campus Hideaway Pizza used to be, that was...
Yep.
I mean, that was one of the Lawrence classics. I mean, a first restaurant. I don't know how long it lasted, but it was around when I was a kid, for sure.
People came in, and they saw the fireplace in the corner, and they said, oh, that's where I had my first date, over there. We sat by the fire. But you know what? I don't think I was there 2 years, and I already outgrew the space.
That's cool.
So within two more years, we started looking for a bigger commercial kitchen with a good loading dock, and we ended up finding the space we're presently in now. So
when were you there? When did you...
I think we started construction on the new space December 2003.
Okay.
So that was probably about almost 4 years.
That's exciting. So now, when you started your business there, so you went and you all of a sudden now you're in your own space, just
right.
catering hall.
Right.
It's probably a lot bigger than you're used to.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you arrange, you know, how are you booking people? How did you get the businesses? Because for a while it was just pretty much you, right? Now then you had a few people.
Well, I had a few people that kind of, I actually had a lot of customers that paid all the bills, and we were doing great. All my debt from the first construction was paid off within those 3 years.
That's amazing.
We used, back in those days, I could use personal credit, you know, credit card checks were flowing like there's no tomorrow, and the rates were very good. But the next time around, I got an SBA loan, and we had a well-established business, so there was very little risk for the bank, and I was told that the SBA application was approved within record time, less than a day.
That's awesome.
I know, it was pretty good.
Oh, my God. You serious?
I am serious.
Well, congratulations to you. I don't even want to tell you my deal with the SBA. I finally got it approved, but my goodness, it was a 2-year ordeal.
Wow. Well, I also had Tim Metz at Douglas County Bank. Well, he wasn't at Douglas County Bank at the time, but he is my banker. He was at I think Caw Valley Development Center or something like that. But he really helped me write that application. We wrote it well, and
maybe you didn't ask for enough money.
Oh, I should have asked for more, actually. I should have asked for more. So we started building. And of course, just like any business, when you go through that kind of transition, there were some growing pains. Things didn't always work out like we thought. Things ended up costing more than we thought. And I ended up using a lot of personal credit. And, in hindsight, I should have probably let the landlord pay for all the... leaseholding improvements, and then I just paid a higher lease payment. But you know, that was one of the shocks of going from mom and pop shop to something bigger.
Right.
I had such an amazing lease payment with me providing the financing for the upgrades. I just couldn't see myself paying $8,000. Well, when all said and done, I think now I'm at the point where I'm doing another. My next set of renovations, and this time my landlord's going to finance them, and I'm just going to pay a higher lease payment.
So that's pretty exciting. You were talking about that a little bit before. What you're doing some major renovations, actually. What are you doing?
Well, actually, the renovation started about 2 years ago. You know, competition's always changing here in the city, and economy's always changing, and people in business, you either are improving or you're... either business
not.
Or you're not, or you're stagnating.
stagnating. Right, absolutely.
So we changed the decor in the ballroom about a year ago, and we redid our bathrooms a year ago. But we just need to increase capacity. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we had those chats with Doug Compton and the Masonic Temple, which is a great facility. But unfortunately, that wonderful facility, it's just going to take so much money to to bring it back to life. And I'm just not sure that the business that will come my way will be able to pay all the bills.
Right.
So, but the smarter thing for Miss Ellie's, I think, would be to expand interiorly within my footprint. So what we're doing is we're reclaiming some storage space, or I would say the area above the storage space, the area above storage space. We're going to knock down our north wall and we're going to build a mezzanine that will provide comfortable seating almost 100.
That's
okay,
awesome.
So, all right, I'm trying to visualize. I've been in Miss Ellie's, your north wall, okay.
So you go in, go to the ballroom. Right, across from the dance floor.
Okay.
So this way it's going to actually provide more of a, instead of having two focal points in the room, you really have just one. The dance floor is kind of the stage and where all the action happens. But in the front room as well, the dry cleaner next door, there's a lot of space that they're not using. So we're going to knock that north wall about 18 feet into the dry cleaners.
Which is that their space?
It's there. Actually, the dry cleaner is my landlord,
the
Smallberg family. They own my building, and they are just the most wonderful landlords.
That's great.
God, that's wonderful.
So anything I need, they're very helpful. We just got a new HVAC unit. And once again, I didn't pay for it. They just raised my lease payment. So then maybe I'll be able to refinance my house now because I'm not tapping into too much personal credit.
So that's interesting. So that's something you learned when you first started out. You just were so concerned about those monthly payments. It's like, oh, well, we'll take on all this kind of additional debt renovating.
Right.
Now you're working with, because they are building improvements.
Right.
So now you're working with your landlord.
Right.
Who's paying for them, and then basically he's financing them, and then you're paying him over time.
See, before, you know, sales just kept dramatically increasing. We, you know, a lot of business people just think, oh, as long as cash is flowing, just keep billing, just keep doing things. But at some point you have to stop and you have to really be conscious of what you're doing, how you're doing, understanding your business reports. But, you know, when the economy started tanking a couple of years ago, I had to say, whoa, you know, businesses stopped spending, university budgets, you know, they took a little longer for them to slow down. It's only been the past 2 years that university budgets have been tighter with regard to this kind of, you know, purchase. Because my business is actually built on four legs. I would say about 25% is business, about 25% is weddings, 25% is the university, and then the other 25% is community organizations and private people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not really relying on just one area, so we can supplement.
That's great. Well, now, when you were talking about those four different areas, when the economy did go south, how did you deal with it, and do you feel like you had enough of a business plan that you actually planned it out, that you were able to
What I want to do is that's a pretty heavy topic, I can certainly add a few things to that. What I want to do first, I want to get to a break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to chat about that, because that definitely affected both of us. Your story is very, I mean, I hear you talking, and it could be me. I mean, a lot of the things that Steve is saying, I mean, very similar happened to me, but you know, it's all interesting, and I certainly encourage you to come right back. Hang on through the break, and we'll also do sports on the 23s, and we'll be right back here on 1320 KLWN. Okay, nice little American Girl. Is that a new one or is that an old one? Okay, nice. Way to be, Eric. My Trojan man in there, Topeka High Trojan, Eric, my producer, nice job. Well, we're back here on John Flood and Friends. I'm Matt Llewellyn, sitting in for John Flood. And we're talking with Ann Herzog from Lawrence Business Magazine and Steve Miscelli of Miscelli's. And it's very interesting stuff, right up my alley, what I normally do on Saturday, feature local businesses and local business owners and all the challenges that they have to face, but also the value that they bring to this community. And certainly Miscelli's brings a great value to this community. We're just talking off the break that he's very unique in what he does. I mean, he's unique in what he does.
He is. And we were also talking about, and this is where I thought it would be interesting when I knew that you were going to be filling in for John, having Steve here, because we were talking just about how the economy, how you keep your business when it's so dependent on, you know, other people bringing you work I mean, because it's not, I would say, it's a luxury catering and those are events and stuff. So those are things people cut back on.
True.
And how did you maintain a healthy business where you're actually even expanding now during that time? I mean, what did you do that was smart, and what did you do that was dumb?
Well, first of all, I did have, you know, one of those aha moments or that initial shock when I saw things changing. Mm-hmm. But I ask anybody who knows me, I am the eternal optimist and I will not be a victim. And I always come up with a plan, whether it succeeds initially or it has some hiccups, I try to do something.
Proactive.
And that's what business people have to do. I mean, I'm always telling my staff, I need, as the owner, I need to stay two steps ahead of my staff, two steps ahead of my customers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look forward. Basically, when things started changing, I started looking at ways that I could do things more efficiently. First of all, first and foremost, mm-hmm. we had to look for waste. And believe me, there was so much waste, so much waste. I wasn't watching things, which often happens when owners and managers are so into producing. I mean, you can have a great product, but you could be wasting and not really making any money off of it. And unfortunately, that was often the case with my mm-hmm. business. So I started looking at everything, watching sales. We established what is a sale that is a good sale, what's a bad sale. We created actually a whole line called the Casual Dining Special, Wedding Dining Special, which competed with grocery stores and barbecue restaurants. Unfortunately, there are a lot of venues in town and prices are very high. And it's often the case that people will spend so much money on their venue that all they can afford, inexpensive.
Mediocrity food.
Mediocre food. I would just say inexpensive.
Well, I mean, come on. There's no question about it. You go to places, and we don't even need to mention names, but you go to specific places sometimes, and you want a meal for 40 people, and everybody's getting the chicken and the potatoes and the vegetable. God only knows when that chicken was cooked. God only, you know, your sauce comes out of a can. I mean, there's all kinds of things that lack quality.
Right.
And that's what you're trying to combat, that you combat. Yes?
Right. I would say, how we marketed that, we said this package, this line of dinner specials costs less because the ingredients cost less and the labor that we have to put in to produce those products is less. And that's where the savings is, and that's why it can be cheaper. And actually, it is most weddings, most couples choose that kind of line
mm-hmm.
because they really want to spend lots of money on decor. They want to spend lots of money on decor. And that's where my whole business philosophy is a little bit different. I pride myself on providing what I believe is the best combination of venue, food, service, and price. I mean, mm-hmm. there are other venues that you could say are nicer than mine. There are some people in town that might produce more exquisite cuisine than I do. There are other people that have prices that are cheaper or more expensive than I do. And there are other people whose service might be a little more elegant. But I shoot for the 60 to 70% of the Lawrence population that's in the middle. I'm not going for the bottom 20. I'm not really going for the top 20. I'm going for the people that will keep my tables turning, if you can mm-hmm. use that expression. I worked at McDonald's during my formative years as well. So I know the Dobskis very well, and they're my role models. And I copy a lot of procedures and policies from McDonald's.
No problem with that.
They know what they're doing.
I worked at Applebee's, and I got a lot of stuff from them.
I mean, there's no something that those national chains, they really have their standardization processes down. And when you have a company that's built on more than three people, you really have to have standardization. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have manuals that train our employees on each level of service. And we have different levels of service. We have information. We train people on different types of venues. We have very extensive training, I believe, because our customers expect more from Maselli's. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, I would say they do. And as you're talking about the different classifications of food, I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I can put out a very inexpensive catering that's great, but it's inexpensive. It's easier to produce. Not necessarily the quality is lower, but it's just so easy to produce.
Right.
Meatballs, any pasta, mm-hmm. veggie trays, easy time. Get those out easy, relatively inexpensive. You want stuffed Roma tomatoes, bacon-wrapped scallops, little mini sandwiches, very right. elegant, nicer things. Awesome. And the food, you know, but man, it takes so long to produce. Right.
The labor, I mean, that is one of the things that I really have come to understand is how much labor costs. I mean, I have a wonderful business advisor, Peggy Johnson. I don't think you're listening, but you're wonderful and I love you.
Why isn't she listening?
She's
doing business. She's got to make money.
She should have this on in her car and or at the office.
Okay, I will remind her next time.
Okay, great.
But really, I mean, understanding how much labor costs. I mean, we also, when people serve for me, they're not getting the typical $2 to $3 an hour that a restaurant might right. pay them for catering, right. plus the gratuity. At Maselli's, they get paid $9 and $10 an hour. And then gratuities, one thing that's also different is we don't add on 18-20% compulsory gratuity. Everything that we do includes some kind of service, and that goes back to those different models. If people do give us a little extra money because they're very excited about what we did for them, it actually goes into a big pot and it's divided among all the employees, including the sales staff, including the cooks, including the woman who cleans our bathrooms. Because it's my belief that when it takes all of us, every single one of us, from the moment that customer calls on the phone to the moment they're washing their hands after they finish their meal in our bathroom, to do an excellent job, to have the kind of product that I want to provide for this city.
Well, that's interesting.
So then everybody benefits.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
everybody
absolutely.
Benefits.
Well, I think that's really interesting because what it makes is, I think, makes everybody feel vested in a sense of pride in where they're working.
Yeah.
They all feel part of it. That's really, I think that's different. I mean, that kind of comes down to one of the other things we were talking about. So running a catering business as opposed to running a restaurant. Those are two different...
Completely different things.
Yeah. But I don't... I mean, until you start really thinking about it, I think a normal layperson, myself, you're like, you're getting food.
So yeah, see, so often I'll go to a restaurant and there's so many more creative and artistic things that you can do with a served meal at a restaurant because you're just making one plate or two plates and then sending it out. It's served within like seconds often. Whereas catering, you know, you're producing the food to be transported, and that might take from the kitchen to the actual time it goes on a buffet might be an hour. Mm-hmm. So you have to create items and cook them to keep that lag time in mind. For example, things that are fried really don't transport very well.
Not at all.
Anything crispy or crunchy, fried chicken, no. I mean, if we're in-house and we're catering Maselli's, you know, we have a little more leeway because right. we've got the kitchen right there. And then you also have to think about different people's tastes. You have to shoot, like I said, for that well-balanced options that appeal to most people, as opposed to that one person who has to put Tabasco sauce on everything or cayenne pepper on everything,
right.
or that other person who has to have no spices at all. I mean,
right.
we have to kind of shoot for what's in the center. In a restaurant, right. you know, there's so many things on the menus that everybody can find something that would appeal to them. But when mm-hmm. you go into a banquet or you're going to a catering
right.
event, you kind of have to find that happy medium.
Right. Well, and I've certainly found it a million different times. And, you know, when I go into an event, when I have someone who wants to do an event at the restaurant or if they want me to cater, I try to talk to them first. And let's get into that when we come back. We're going to need to take a short little break, but you've got to know your guest. And I'm sure that's certainly the way it is with me, guests that walk in the door or catering guests. And I'm interested to hear how it is for Steve as well. So we'll be right back on with John Flood and Friends. I'm Matt Llewellyn on 1320 KLWN, Lawrence. Welcome back, Lawrence. This is Matt Llewellyn filling in for John Flood and John Flood and Friends. And we're talking with Ann Herzog from Lawrence Business Magazine. And by the way, you can pick up the Lawrence Business Magazine at all the Hy-Vees in town, the Merck. You can also find it at LawrenceBusinessMagazine.com?
Yes, all spelled out, LawrenceBusinessMagazine.com.
Okay.
And you can also follow us on Facebook, where we'll tell about who's our next guest the upcoming weeks and submit questions.
Okay, awesome. And next week's guest is Hillary Brown, a good friend of mine.
That's right.
Owner of Local Burger.
That's right. In fact, speaking of Facebook, I did get one question on Facebook. They said it was from, and we actually use people's names because we feel like that's the only fair dialogue. So Dee Steinley said to me, said, "Why to ask Steve Maselli why he is so awesome."
I would just sounds bounce, like more than just a Facebook friend.
I would bounce that question back to her and say, "Why are you so awesome?" No, I know I don't need any reasons why Dee Steinley is so awesome. No, Dee Steinley has been also a longtime customer in the School of Business, mm-hmm. which just so happens to be our best university customer, and we bend over backwards and do everything we can for them because they're also so good to us.
Well, and leading into that then, you were just, you know, they've been a good customer. And then we were talking about the economy.
Right.
So how we kind of got sidetracked
a little bit.
So when talking about the economy, you said like you made some changes.
Yeah,
like,
we talked about payroll. I mean, payroll and human labor, that is the most expensive, highest portion of our products. I'm sure you would agree.
Absolutely.
Labor is,
yes,
is there.
Yes, yes.
Well, I had a full-time accountant, and mostly because I was also proud. I wanted to have a full-time accountant. I thought it was like a badge of honor. But really, I was looking at what was being provided, and I thought to myself, there's got to be a better way. So we eliminated the full-time accounting position. Now I have two accountants that are part-time. Used to spend about $40,000 on a full-time accountant.
Wow.
Now I probably spend about $5,000 max. Now their responsibilities are split. One accountant does payroll and taxes. Mm-hmm. The other accountant does accounts receivable, accounts payable. And what's great about that, though, is unfortunately that full-time accountant got sick once and she was gone for 3 weeks and I was in big trouble. So now we have two people involved with the accounting that are familiar with QuickBooks, familiar enough with the system. So I guess you'd call it contingency plan.
Right.
It's a contingency plan. And so the accounting was an immediate savings right there.
Mm-hmm.
I must say I used to pride myself on being able to provide 100% of the deductible for health care, but I did have to limit that to 75. I did lower that to a $75 contribution monthly.
That's still a really nice benefit.
Well, most of my employees had spouses that worked for companies, and they had great policies. Mm-hmm. So they got that $75 as a cash out value.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have what I call the dream team in the kitchen. I was very proud of that dream team. Two of them used to be high-up cooks at Free State, and actually both of them were chef's apprentices for my ex-executive chef. And so I was very happy. On good days, they were the Three Musketeers. On bad days, they were the Three Stooges. But you know, at some point, you have to analyze, you know, even though it sounds great and it's kind of a family atmosphere, when our executive chef, who commuted from Topeka, became pregnant. No, well, his wife was pregnant. He found a job close to home, mm-hmm. and I took that opportunity to restructure how we operated the head that position in the kitchen. I always wanted to have, knowing that we're all growing older, I wanted an executive chef who did not have to do everything. I wanted an executive chef who spent their time and their knowledge and used all their experience to be the best planner, the best purchaser, to be the best trainer possible. And then we have
to really be more the business aspect.
He is watching the business.
Yeah.
Yes. And you know what? I have to tell you, I was trying to get the old executive chef to do that, and he just could not get it.
Mm-hmm.
He just could not get it. Mm-hmm. So, but after the use of a hammer or two, the new executive chef, he totally gets it. And I have never had a happier kitchen staff in my whole life. I mean, they've become
wonderful.
They have taken so much stress off of me. They're such team players now. I'm John Thompson. I love you. If you're listening, you're wonderful. And we now have a new set of cooks that we're training. And that's the other thing. A lot of places don't have standardized recipes. Talking about standardization, we had like three or four recipes for the same thing. I went out and bought some cookbook software, and now every single recipe, my expectation is before any recipes are prepared, I have to see a typed up formal recipe. So long story short, we now have savings and efficiencies in the kitchen as well. And we also have happier people. And we all know happy cows make better cheese.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. By standardizing, the people also know what expectations are.
Yes.
And they know how to deliver on those expectations. And instead of having that target, a wandering target, right, which is very frustrating.
It's also less frustrating for new employees. I mean, you know, how frustrating it is for a new employee to come in and not have a clear idea of what they're expected to do. So then we'll go up to my event coordinator. We used to be in the Spring Hill Suites as their in-house caterer since before they even opened. But with the economy, one of my decisions was to eliminate business that was not really making me enough money. At the Spring Hill Suites, we had to do a lot of business. And, you know, over time, we've just noticed a trend that businesses really don't want to spend money. They want to spend as little money as possible. So we pulled out of there, I think about a year and a half ago. And, wow, I just started smiling. Because that's less responsibility and related to that was brunch.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Related to that was brunch, you know. We originally started brunch, you know, 5 or 6 years ago because after one of the best weddings we had ever done, I wanted to reward my employees. So I took, at that time, about 16 to 18 employees that worked that event and all the cooks and the sales staff to a very popular brunch spot in town. And we kind of had a disappointing experience. We couldn't even get a carafe of coffee to stay on our table. You'd think that a table of, you know, 16 to, you know, 18 people, you would have good service because they would want to, you know. But we didn't. And my employees were saying to me, I said not one word because this was a gift to them, man, we could do a better job than this. We could do this. and that's why we started. It was kind of an ego thing.
But that's kind of cool, though, when your staff is passionate about something. I tell you, if my staff is ever passionate about something, I love to roll with it.
I think passion is great, and so is ego, and so is the willing to do it. But ultimately, as a business, it comes down to profitability.
Absolutely.
And if it makes sense.
Right.
And, you know, brunch, you know, we had some growing pains in the beginning with brunch to learn how to put out that kind of brunch. But unfortunately, brunch had very high overhead. You know, we had to make food. We're not like a restaurant. We would have to make food for 150, whether they showed up or not. We would have to convert the room from a wedding the night before to kind of a brunch restaurant-ish style. You know, it took a lot of labor. It took a lot of time. And I was tired of having my Sundays booked. So, you know, when the economy started tanking, we started trying to do some other things. And when I started looking at the books and comparing how much labor was percentage of sale, sometimes on bad Sundays, it could be like 75-80% of the gross, you know, was
money.
Labor, and we lost. So it just did not make sense.
No,
that is bad. That is stupidity. That is, this is where a lot of businesses, you know, and they don't realize what's happening. They don't look close enough at their books. They don't want to change with the times. I mean, unfortunately, there are a lot of my downtown merchant neighbors who are so stuck in the past. They won't change the way they do things. Well, you know what? We pulled out of the Spring Hill Suites and we dumped brunch. I haven't been happier on Sundays, and our profitability just keeps going up and up and up. So really, you know, you make the changes you need to, and there's only so much you could do with the market. There's just so much competition out there. I mean, you look at my competition. I'm really a unique bird. I mean, most of the venues in town are really big corporations. They're hotels, country clubs.
Right.
So I'm kind of really the only private-ish catering hall with dining services. But then there's also caterers. There's a lot of private caterers. So I have people compete with me on various levels, but I am kind of a unique bird.
Well, and when you're talking about that with the staff, do you have a lot of turnover? I mean, you're talking about these changes you made, but you have like your service staff in your training. You must have a lot of turnover, just like I'm sure you do, Matt. How do you manage that?
Well, we have three levels of service staff. We have our servers that are the entry level. We have assistant banquet captains. Then we have banquet captains.
Okay.
The banquet captains tend to stay with us for 2 to 3 years. I mean, we treat our employees well. They get to take leftovers home. We work well to fit in with their school schedules or their primary job schedules, if you want to call it that. We have gotten better at training employees, but also holding them accountable. You know, in the beginning, when you're a new business person, you want to believe that you can make your employees be exactly what you need and want them to be. But that is just not the case. You just have to get over that. And it's just part of pruning the tree. You've got to get rid of employees that are bad apples. They don't produce.
Because they're not a fit. If they're not a fit, and they don't maybe... And that's the thing that I find is you find people who really, they're not a fit, and they don't like working there as much as they like just getting a paycheck.
Right, right.
And if they don't really like working there, they're not adding anything. Right. They're not doing themselves any favors, and they're not doing you any favors.
Nope.
And so it's better that they just not.
Because they also affect
the rest of the staff, too.
Of course. I've already told my HR person, you know what, if we ever have an employee where I'm more frustrated and more nervous with them coming to work, I'd rather do the job myself, get rid of them, and start from scratch.
Yeah.
I'd rather start from scratch. So no, we have in every position, every new hire, we have a 6-month period where at the end of that 6 month or even any time before, if we get to the point where we say, this isn't working out, they walk away, or if they want to wake away from us, no hard feelings.
So. Yeah, absolutely. We're same way. And we don't, we start folks off at you've got to be a hostess before you become a server.
Oh, yeah.
And so really, hostesses, actually, we have a lot of hostesses who've been hostesses forever and they enjoy being hostesses. Our cycle is literally about 3 to 4 years. We get them during their college years.
Right.
And we're very fortunate. Until this summer, we actually lost, at graduation, we ended up losing about 7 servers, which was our biggest loss ever. As far as in one group,
right.
Up to that point this year, we'd only hired 3 people.
Wow, that's good. That's
wow.
good.
Now we've since hired about 10 new people since
right.
graduation, but because we had to. But until then, 3 people all year right. long.
Yeah, actually, with the economy, with the decrease in business associated with the economy, but also with the reduction in business that we created by eliminating brunch and eliminating the Spring Hill Suites. We really haven't had to hire people in almost a year. I mean, it's been very sporadic, very few mm-hmm. people.
Right.
Because we do have a tendency to keep people, but not actually that long.
Right.
Not that long.
No, do you get a lot of, like Matt, do you get a lot of college students?
Yeah, a lot of college students, yes. But I know there's a lot of people out there who just need a second job. I tend
to also like
people who have full-time jobs and just want to work maybe on the weekends, one shift or something.
How many
like
nights a week are you busy? How many nights a week are you booked?
It just depends on the season.
Okay.
It depends on the season because we have in-season, we have out-of-season. I mean, January, February, March, because of basketball, I mean, people tend not to want to have parties because they're like, oh, no, we can't compete with basketball. And plus, business events, people are worried sometimes about weather. But a prime banquet season is April, May, and the beginning of June. And then also the beginning of school, August, September, October, and December. I mean, because of Thanksgiving, November's mm-hmm. kind of a lull-ish month.
But then you have some holiday stuff that's in
yes.
December.
So I would say, the season's mm-hmm. kind of half the year is in season. It's huge. The other half is not huge. And see, that's been the other struggle with my business models is how do I overcome that cash flow roller coaster?
Mm-hmm.
And through all the changes now, it used to be that we would have to do over $100,000 worth of business in 1 month in order to make sure we were being profitable. But with all the changes, we've now lowered that significantly. So now I'm not freaking out during the off season. And we're actually getting through, this past, for example, from the business perspective, business people could understand this, but January, February month has traditionally been my hardest quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I did not put one penny on credit. So I got through the cash flow
that's
and
wonderful.
Everything. For me,
that's a big weight.
I smiled my whole way. I still pinch myself thinking, holy cow, this business has really come a long way.
So as you were saying earlier, you're went from being a caterer to being a businessman who caters.
It's true. People ask me, if I'm a caterer, I said, no, I'm a business person now.
That's great.
I'm trying to be a smarter business person mm-hmm. who caters, who caters.
Who is the business of catering.
But yes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, it's very true.
Well, it's been fun having you here. This has been fascinating to me. And I wanted, One other thing we never got to, and this is just to put out there, the internet.
Oh, the internet.
It's changed. It's because do you get a lot of people coming and looking at your stuff on the internet? I mean, how does, and briefly, has that made a huge difference or not as much as you would think?
Well, in the beginning, we used our website. We tried to change photos and put lots of things like that on the web. But now with Facebook, we have tons of albums. So we use Facebook to present what we're doing. Visually, we use our website to just give the menu. Mm-hmm. But then we also use a site called Wedding Wire. We use that for reviews. Any business can take all the good reviews, post them on your website. But they're not, I would say they're not as credible if the business controls what reviews are there. So we have all of our reviews on Wedding Wire, because then you have independent control. I can't block them. I can't choose. Oh, let's just put all the good ones.
Right.
You know, I must say, I told you about the hardships. There's one review on Wedding Wire that was reflective of some of the growing pains that we went through in 2003. But you know what? Because of that event, I learned. Mm-hmm. And I changed the way I do things. Because I'm determined to make sure the same mistakes do not happen over and over and over again, which unfortunately a lot of my competitors at the corporate level, at the Hyatt corporate level, they don't have that continuity. The business owner is not involved. There is no collective memory. There's no elephant who remembers everything, who can continually tell stories to the employees. This is why we do things, because we don't want this to happen.
Right. That's the difference between being a local small business owner who's really vested in their business personally, as opposed to somebody that just owns the business or just managing a business.
Right.
I mean, that is,
it's true.
It's really different. That's one of the things
Your headaches are a lot different versus working for a big company versus owning your own company.
You're the worst and best boss you could ever be.
That's right. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun. And Steve, I've learned a lot about your business. Thank you for coming on today. And thank you for coming on with the Lawrence Business Magazine.